and welcome to the fourth edition of the Martlet Roundtable, and we are joined today by a staff writer and another editor. So we're expanding the horizons of the Martlet Roundtable beyond sports.
Woo.
Joined by Adrian Parody.
Hello.
We're joined by Adam Heyman.
Hello, hello.
We're talking all things Oscars and all things student elections.
Yeah.
So, first off, I mean, we are recording this a week after the Oscars.
Yep.
By the time you're listening to this, the Oscars are going to be old news.
But that's okay.
That's okay, though. What have we learned? Actually, the first thing we can talk about, the Oscars themselves as a TV production, I heard historically low ratings. I heard very bad ratings.
Really?
Yeah, they were concerned. 6-year low ratings was what I heard.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't know that even this morning. I hope that is true. What were your initial impressions of the broadcast, the production? Adam, take it away. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty fun. Neil Patrick Harris is a fun guy, you know. He did his little magic act thing. Well, not really an act. He had like one thing he did with the his predictions in the magic box. And he did a Birdman reference and all that, and that was fun. And it wasn't the best. He sang a song, which is kind of what he does.
What about the results? What did you think of the results?
The results, yeah. I mean, I was happy. I was a big Birdman fan.
Yeah.
And that really cleaned up. I was expecting Boyhood to win.
Yeah, me too. Really.
But I wanted Birdman to win, so yeah. I was happy.
We completely agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I mean, as long as Birdman got the cinematography, that was the only thing. I was like, I better get that, otherwise I'll be furious. And it did, so I was happy. Might be unpopular opinion, didn't really want Eddie Redmayne.
Eddie Redmayne, why not?
I don't know, I just probably because I liked Birdman so much. I think Michael Keaton was pretty damn good in it. But then again, the clip that they showed of him when they were doing the, you know, summary highlight.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Really, I looked at it, and when we saw it out of context, he kind of, his lines weren't quite supernatural. Like, they weren't as smooth as I remembered them, so maybe I need to look back at it again.
So this is Michael Keaton's line?
Michael Keaton's line.
Yeah, okay. You know, I always struggle with the Oscars with biopics. Struggle with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's ever since like we saw Jamie Foxx as Ray, if you're doing an impression, if you're doing a...
Yeah.
Stephen Hawking's a little different. Obviously, there are physical reasons why there's a more challenging role, but I always wonder, like, is there a privileged state for people who are doing characters of their own creation or things like that? I mean...
Yeah, there's a lot more that goes into... You can't, like, oh, I'm going to take Stephen Hawking. I'm going to make up my Stephen Hawking.
Exactly.
You can't... Yeah. No, I think my motive for this scene actually is going to be... he's doing... No, you can't do that.
Adrian, what were your impressions of the Oscars? Tell us about it.
No, I agree. Like, it was fun. I'm not normally, like, that into the Oscars, but this year was probably, like, the exception to that. But, like, I loved Neil Patrick Harris, to be honest. I think he's a funny guy, and especially the song he did at the beginning, like his tribute to film, I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah,
it was pretty fun.
Yeah,
with Jack Black coming out too.
I know. I thought that was great. And yeah, I agree. Like, I loved Birdman. I thought it was so good.
Yeah.
I was really surprised actually. Gone Girl got like no love, which
I am not a fan of Gone Girl.
No,
I could go on for hours about this.
No,
I don't like Gone Girl at all.
Oh man, yeah, I thought it was so good.
I think that they were there was good reasons that it was. I'm not sure. Well, I don't know if this is the time and place for our Gone Girl hate session, my Gone Girl hate session, but...
Right?
I mean, from Birdman, though, I struggle with, like, films that are, especially, like, viewed as artistic, or sometimes they leave me cold. Like, I feel like, I remember Gravity, and like, it really, my desire to see that movie was very, very, very low, and Birdman was fun.
Birdman was fun,
and it was funny, and it was light, and it was serious at times, and it was well done, and it was fun and engaging. I loved it. Mm-hmm. It was enjoyable. I'd watch it again.
I felt smart after watching. I felt like picking up all these things. Like, oh, symbols and wow. And
which I'm guessing is probably where they're. And like a lot of people do complain about the Oscars sort of gearing themselves towards the film intelligentsia. But I thought Birdman was the antithesis of that. I thought it was fun. And that's one of my favorite things I liked about it. I liked how fun it was.
Yeah,
so I'm happy to see reward.
Yeah.
That being said,
I thought so too.
I mean, if I was, Linklater. That's hardly even a movie. It's more a cinematic achievement. It's just like, I'm surprised it didn't get rewarded just for the ambition of it, right?
But that's, I think, almost why it didn't. Because, like, Boyhood, it was super interesting to watch. It was an amazing product. But like as an actual movie, I didn't find it super interesting. It was just like, it was really just going off that gimmick of like, look at this thing we did.
I think it's some guts for the Academy to not just be like, well, good work.
Yeah, like, yeah, oh, here you go. I mean, the definitely other awards ceremonies did give recognition to him just because of like, wow, good job.
Yeah, I mean, Golden
like the
Wars
actor,
is...
the main actor and the kid, he got some special award. Yeah. Just being like, hey, right, good for you. Yeah.
Like, good way for to you grow up,
taking all your summers of your life to do this.
I mean, contrast the Oscars experience. Did you guys watch the Golden Globes?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Golden Globes, I mean, it's such a different experience though, right? The Oscars is such more formal way. But the Golden Globes is like, they hive off musical and comedy, so like they never have to really make those tough calls. And
yep.
Boyhood, I don't think there'll ever be another Boyhood movie. It's kind of weird to me that it...
Oh, there's definitely going to be people who are going to try it, though, right?
Oh, God.
Oh,
they're
going to
be so bad. Oh, yeah, I mean,
did
like...
Did it make money, is my question. Do you guys know?
I would hope so. Yeah.
I mean, because I knew it was kind of like a pet project. And what studio is going to be like, hey, I like your idea. Talk to me again in 10 years when we release it. Like, what if, like,
what's the shoot schedule that? 12 years. Oh, great.
So we're not going to see a dime for like a decade. Like, the whole company could have went broke. So I was surprised that they did. And I just wonder, like, I'm sure you guys are familiar with it in the lead up to the Oscars. So much talk about, the campaigns, the Oscar campaign American Sniper was waging, and these campaigns, blah, blah, blah. Ooh, they're going to split the vote, and voting, splitting. How on earth, I mean, is there anything more opaque than the way that the Oscars is sort of, I mean, it's just, who knows how these things are decided? I always think about this with the Grammys, like, any sort of these award shows, it is kind of bizarre that we sit around in a room and try to figure out which... How do you compare Birdman to Boyhood? How do you compare Boyhood to Selma? It seems insane,
weird.
But it's like this every year, and I always forget that it's never different. It's always, and the Grammys are always the same. How do you compare, a Kanye West album to a Beck album or a Beyonce album? How on earth do you do it? How do we establish, But I mean, do you guys have any insight into how that works?
Well, like that's one thing I found interesting. That's maybe why I was more interested this year, as I looked into it a little bit. And one thing I didn't realize is that like it is the Academy, like quote unquote, that decides it. Mm-hmm. But the Academy is made up of like over 6,000 members that votes on it. I thought it was like it'd be like an elite group of like people that know these things, maybe like critics and stuff like that could say like. Informatively, like this is the best picture made this year, but it's not. It is like it's
a mess of actors and critics and
6,000 people.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It is like it's all the people in the industry, right? Yeah. And so like it is like the actors will vote on actors and the directors will vote on directors, and so it's like people who are doing it are also the ones.
So it's like a jury of your peers sort of thing.
Yeah, okay. I mean, which does make sense. Yeah.
I guess that makes sense.
Because animation, like I remember when the Noms came out and Lego Movie wasn't on animation, I was like, what the hell?
Lego
Movie was so much fun. And then I read into it, and the people who vote for it are animators. Like the people who do it who are picking the nominations are specifically animators. So Lego Movie, from an animation standpoint, maybe wasn't as strong as some of the DreamWorks ones, and like the Princess Kyuga, I think it was.
Oh, there's always the Japanese films. It's all
artistic ones, right?
Always the Miyazaki films.
So I got, you're like, okay, I guess maybe the animation wasn't as good.
There are some pretty arcane restrictions on this. Like I remember thinking, okay, well, one of the ones I'm sure Birdman's going to win is the score. Right. I remember thinking to myself, well, Birdman's going to win for score because it was an improvised score. It was done. That drummer is really cool. And that's actually, there's some people who hated the score, my mother included.
Oh, wow.
She hated the score. but and apparently it was disqualified because of you needed a certain amount of musical cues to qualify as a score.
That's weird.
So I'm talking about, it's like, How to Train Your Dragon 2? Remember the Lego movie? Like,
I know.
Yeah.
As a cartoon enthusiast, like I was super upset about that. Like I watch more cartoons than regular movies probably, and
okay, we have an expert then. So you tell me, How to Train Your Dragon 2, why
was
is
like
it,
not that good at all, but it was Big Hero 6 that won.
Right
which again it was cute and fun, but like Lego Movie could have been like the best picture last year, I thought. Like
I love Lego Movie.
So it was great.
I was willing to not like Lego Movie, and I watched it, and I was absolutely delighted.
Yeah,
it was
that's
fun and funny. It sends a really good message to kids.
Super great.
And let's all just love the Lego Movie. Like,
and Will Ferrell, and came out of, I didn't know he was an idiot when I walked into that. Yeah. He came out of nowhere, and I was ecstatic.
Yeah.
I was so, that was so much fun.
So now we've talked about the voting procedures of the Academy. So let's move on to another complex and seedy world, and that is, of course, student elections. See that segue right there? Seamless.
That's beautiful.
Seamless transition. Yeah. So we have two venerable student election experts here today, Adrian and Adam. They have devoted a lot of ink to this in the issues of the Martlet. And Adrian helped prepare our election issue that's out right now, which will be already be a week old, I think, when you're reading this. So you can go back and check it online.
Listening to this.
Reading this words out loud, reading, listening it through your ears.
Reading with your ears.
Let's talk. We don't want to talk candidates because it's old news, because the election's already happened. We want to talk about the process. What was the student turnout last year, Adam?
Student turnout for last year was 17%.
17%.
Which was up from 2013. No, I think it was actually down. Let me look.
We have a crack research staff.
13 was 18.8%.
Oh, so just slightly down.
And
so
then down. 2012 was 20.9%.
So we're trending down, folks. Yeah. Things are, so hopefully, by the time you're listening to this, we'll have had a 78% turnout, and none of this will matter. But, however, it does look as though one of the biggest obstacles to this student election is going to be getting people to actually vote. How can this be done better? Not at, because let's not kid around. It's not just UVic. It's every campus. It's every campus. It's every election. Canada in general struggles with this problem, especially Canadian universities and their. Let's talk universities. What can they do better? Start with you, Adrian.
Sure. It's a hard issue, and I think it's one that persists all the time. It's like earlier in the year, the UVSS had that SAGM where they wanted to vote to lower quorum, right? Because so often they'd have these meetings and just nobody would show up. And so the meeting to lower quorum didn't actually meet quorum, so they couldn't vote on it to do it. So
that's a Far Side cartoon.
Like, I know, right? Crazy. It is. It's like a headline from The Onion or something.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah.
But it was true, and so which was super interesting. But like I don't. It's really just like an issue of getting kids involved, and more or less, I think you almost need like some kind of gimmick. It's kind of a far-reaching example because it's in Britain, but there's this British school that ran this campaign, and they did goats for votes, which was just super fun. And so it's exactly what it sounds like. They just had a pen of goats that they got from a farmer on campus, and like people basically just came up and like were like, "What's with these goats?" And they would get there, and then realizing like voting was happening right next to them. And so
no way,
but it worked. But they managed to get people just like in the area, and then be like, "Oh, well, you're here. Like pet a goat and then vote." And so
That sounds better than anything I could think of.
Yeah, so I know, right?
Like, really, yeah.
Solutions, Adam. I want solutions.
Solutions.
I want to fix this problem. Well, I'm sick of this. We're all sick. In this economy, we cannot afford to not be voting, right?
I mean, it helps that we have the online voting. I mean, if you look at the stats from voting, I can't remember the year that they brought it in, but it was 4 or 5 plus maybe years ago. And the voter turnout before was like 1%, like when we didn't have for campus elections.
Oh yeah.
It was just ballot, like
it was even worse.
It was way worse. Like it jumped up, you know, 10% probably when we actually had the online.
Shoot. So
so the online obviously is helping, but we're still only at 17%.
So I mean, I'm not expecting, you know, dictatorial levels of 99% turnouts. What I'm not, like, it would just be nice if there would be a representative turnout. You know?
Yeah.
Like, because that's what's really the problem here, is that you have no mandate, you know? Because, and that's not to say that the people voting are obviously the people who express that they care. How do you get more skin in the fight? How do you get these people to understand that there's something in it for them? What do you suggest?
I don't know. It's like you got to get an issue that people really care about. I mean, when we had what was that one AGM that we recently had with the... Was it the divestment AGM, or it might have been the YPY one? And it was the first AGM or SAGM that UVS held that met quorum in like years, because it was something that people actually cared about.
This was divestment?
And I believe this was divestment.
That was the divestment, yeah.
All right.
And of course, divestment has a huge following, so they're obviously going to bring a lot of people, and a lot of people are at least know and care about it.
Right.
So, I don't know, is campus campus politics exciting enough for someone to even be interested in about.
Right. I mean, divestment is a good issue.
Divestment is a great issue.
Mm-hmm. That's one that gets people, you know, where they live. It gets them there. They're those core issues that they're willing to go into the streets for, you know?
Yeah.
Divestment is a good one because it also was heavily covered in this election. There's an entire sort of group of candidates. Adrian, why don't you explain more of the sort of slate system here and how it can address an issue like divest?
Oh, sure. Well, this year there's three major slates, right? There's the refresh.
There were, I guess, three major slates because, of course, this has already happened. But
yeah, for
here.
Sure.
do you think that I guess my question to you is, do you think the slate system is suited to address a single issue? Like I guess it'd be almost like a single issue party. Divestment's their thing. Is the slate system, you know, well suited for that kind of thing?
To address like an issue like that?
Yeah, exactly.
It seems like it because like. I think so. Generally, like the slates seem to have similar mentalities across all the members, right? And so normally when they start up, they'll all say, like, especially on an issue as big as divest, like they'll say individually, we're all for this, basically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's what sort of unites them as a slate.
Makes voting easy, too, I mean.
Yeah, it does. That's kind of the benefit of a slate. And so.
Benefit of a slate. Let's play devil's advocate. Say you have an issue that you have problems with the university that go beyond divest. With the slate system, essentially, you're given how many choices then? So we have three, I guess?
Three different slates.
Three slates.
Yeah. Three slates, right?
Yeah.
One of them's an anti-slate slate, right? The independents?
Well, the kind of. There was a there was supposedly like some interpersonal issues between members, and so three previous members of the refresh slate broke off and made their own slate, the independents.
Right.
Because they essentially have different views on certain things, but they're working together towards like a similar cause, and so that's why they are the independents. They're working independently, but together.
So. Okay, so this is a party system, no?
These are
political parties at this university level.
Uh-huh.
Is this something we like? Do we like this idea of essentially a party system?
I don't know. Definitely yes and no. It's tough. I mean, you have these parties, and they seem to change names almost every year.
Well,
there won't be a divest next year, will there? I mean,
well, no, there won't be a divest. But there's not not a divest this named slate.
It's involved and
refresh.
Right, right. Yeah.
Sorry.
But I don't know, it's tough. You just get it's just these groups of kids who, you know, all want to work together on something, on issues. And so they make their parties, and that's what they kind of tailor it to. But it just, I'm trying to figure out what I'm trying to say here, but...
Are the students served by this system? That's, I guess, what I'm trying to figure out.
Oh, okay.
Are students served by this? Is this a good thing for undergrads?
Well, one thing I find kind of interesting is I'm pretty sure... Oh, no. I'm forgetting my schools now. But I'm pretty sure it's at UBC.
UBC, yeah.
Has actually banned slate activity for the past, like 8-some-odd years or something like that. Because they found it was actually harmful to the whole voting system, which I thought was pretty interesting.
That's interesting.
And then even talking to one of the candidates here when I was doing the story, she expressed this idea of how when an individual runs, you get $70 at Zap towards your campaigning costs, and then you're allowed to put an additional $30 into it from your own pocket. And so you have a cap of $100 you're allowed to spend on campaigning. But that is like strictly enforced. But that's like each individual person gets that. And so when slates join up together, it can be like 15 people pool their money and use it way more efficiently they can as 15 as opposed to one person using 100.
Right, okay.
And so they just have one slate has a huge, huge advantage of like just advertising and getting their word out as opposed to one individual.
And especially where margins are as thin as they are with the turn of what we just discussed. I mean, advertising and things like that are humongous. I mean, so is that I guess the question goes to you then. Is that something that seems like an unfair advantage for slates? Because then the slate itself, getting on the slate would be just as important as getting elected.
Yeah.
I mean, some ridings, you know, in some parts of Canada, I mean, the election itself is actually the riding committee choosing their candidate for their party. And that part largely happens, you know, behind closed doors. And that, because in some ridings, I live in one of them where, you know, whoever is the conservative candidate where I live, where I'm from, that's the election, right?
That's it.
So then that just happens. That's essentially, it's over and done with. Is that something that, I mean, the slate itself, getting on these slates would become the most important thing. Then the slates themselves hold these sort of arbitrary elections that the students don't even get to decide on. Oh, yay or nay, Slates? Let's just
I'm gonna go nay for Slates. For especially here at our level of university governance, because you get some people. I've heard people say like, oh, okay, so there's like two parties. Do I have to vote all for one party or not? I'm like, no, you can choose whatever candidate you want. You want to look at each candidate and pick which one you want based on what they're telling you.
Right.
But then you get these slates, and one slate, the biggest difference, not including divestment, probably would be like, oh, well, we want to increase student funds by 50 cents a semester.
Right, okay.
And the other one's like, we don't want to increase your tuition. And that's kind of, so one slate says this, one slate says that.
Right.
And then you just get all these people who don't really put their own thoughts too much into it because they have to confine.
Well, yeah, you're asking a lot of different people with, I'm sure, very different ideas about what to do for UVic to essentially decide on one way of doing things or another.
Yeah.
Or, I guess, a third.
Yeah.
And that seems, I don't know, were you yay or nay on slates?
I don't know, almost just to play devil's advocate, I think I almost have to say yay.
Okay.
Partially, like what we're talking about is voter apathy, right? Which is one of the biggest issues right now. And so the benefit of a slate is that someone can look at it and say, they are for these values, I am also for these values, therefore I will vote for this slate. Whereas otherwise, if there's like 37 some odd candidates,
right,
one person has to sit down and read 37 different profiles for these candidates. Mm-hmm. And for someone that's like most students that aren't interested in voting anyways are just not going to do that.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. Yeah, that's it makes the voting process simpler. Absolutely.
It does. It sort of streamlines it where you really need that in this sort of environment, right? So,
yeah. Well, I think we have two very good sort of ways of looking at that. I mean, that's the slate issue is unique because there are other campuses where that isn't allowed, and this isn't the only way of doing things. And are there 37 different ways of thinking about certain issues? Probably not. There are probably only a few different stances you can take. So, I know in other elections I've seen where it's just individuals. It becomes a bizarre sort of popularity. Popularity. Oh, elections are a popularity contest. Hot take. But they become like these weird. A lot of people use like brand associations and like.
Oh, weird.
Oh yeah, it's like Just Do It and like Nike swooshes essentially. And I'm just thinking back to some of the other elections I've seen where they use like really expensive poster making materials, and the sky's the limit with these budgets and stuff like that. So. I don't think that's good either, but I like this idea of a personal cap. From that, that's a good idea. I mean, I don't see anything crazy going on. I don't see anyone renting TV ads or anything like that.
T-shirt guns in class.
That I would support.
Yeah, I really want to see that.
I would support a T-shirt gun. I always think of poor Maud Flanders.
Me too, every time.
Every time, I'm like, part of my heart just like, don't do it.
Play safe, kids.
So the election that I guess just occurred, that everyone now knows the results of, including us, and we're very surprised.
Well, not currently, but future us.
No, when you're hearing this,
we're all
pretty shocked.
Yeah.
I've got to say.
Out of left field, I got to say.
I can't believe it, with that no one voted. Not a single vote occurred, which is sad. But what do you think? Are there any lessons that we've learned about divestment, period? I think this is the real issue, seems to be, in this whole election.
Mm-hmm.
Divestment's a big issue, right?
It's a big issue.
We're going to write about a lot here at the Martlet, where it's our job to keep you guys, the undergrads, informed about these things. Divestment's huge. Let's talk divestment. You were at those meetings, Adrian. You fill us in. What's the gauge the temperature of the campus towards divestment right now?
It's pretty like a hot topic for sure.
First of all, explain, just in case someone has no idea, if they've never heard, what is divestment?
Sure.
What are the core sort of principles of this issue?
So it's essentially UVic has I don't know numbers, but they have some odd millions of dollars invested in fossil fuels, which a lot of people think is bad, and so they are trying to put towards a referendum that would show the student population, their opinions that the university should divest those funds towards renewable energies.
Right. Okay.
Which is essentially just the issue. But it's it's super complex and multifaceted because
reasons. So. But that's a good job. So, Adam, you're the opinions editor. Tell me, what are the opinions? What do people think?
What do people think?
Is it an avalanche of support towards divesting away from fossil fuels?
Yeah, I think the thing about divestment is here at UVic, we don't have too many people outright hating it. We don't have a lot of people getting mad about it. We have a lot of people supporting it, going for it. But there's not. It seems to be supporters and then the apathetic. Really, like I haven't really heard too much from another side.
So the people who do have an opinion are against it normally.
Yeah.
Are against divestment of fossil fuels. Okay. Yeah. So let's So the issue that we actually discussed in editorial earlier this year is like, to whom are the university accountable with their investments? Right? Are they accountable to what the students want ultimately, or are they accountable to what's best for the finances of their own institution? There are, Adrian, we were talking about this before we started recording, there are other universities that have decided to divest, right? This has happened other places?
Yeah, absolutely, which is the interesting thing. Like, there are other places, mostly in the U.S., actually, oddly enough. Right. Mm-hmm. But there are other places that have divested and have made it work. And so it's not impossible by any means. It's just, I think the issue is just that it's more difficult and it's not as financially sound. Not to say that it's not financially sound, but it is... just not as much, so.
So is it a risk? I mean, it's a risk. We know it's a risk. It would be a risk. I mean, well, I mean, when we did that article earlier in the year, I mean, things were a lot different in terms of the
market price of oil.
Yeah,
that's true.
This changes a lot, does it not?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
yes, it does.
We can't really.
I think UVic would like nothing better. I think they would love to divest. I think that you want to get out in front of these things. I think it was Harvard, I think, that we were talking about before that did it?
I'm pretty sure that's it, yeah.
I think those places are only going to do something if they think that they can, A, turn into some sort of, I wouldn't want to say it's a PR stunt, but it would improve the image of the university.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. And this is all what UVic is about, right?
You can't find a more receptive audience. I mean, it would shock people who don't know about how much is invested to know how much was already invested in these companies, mostly because they're reliable at turning profits, and I don't blame them for doing it in the first place. I mean, these people
it's
have
practical.
A lot of, yeah, and they have a lot of masters with these things. I mean, they ultimately are responsible for making sure the university is, afloat from year to year, and from not year to year, 10 years from now. So if divestment was to be an issue that was based strictly on, morality and ethics, I think that would be a slam dunk. I mean, especially out here. Like, this is not, I think that the campus-wide feelings toward, fossil fuel industry is as suspicious as you're going to find in Canada, right?
Yeah, we don't have a, Suncor engineering wing?
Oh, no! It's true, the School of Engineering, Taylor Family, this is another university that will remain nameless. There are many prairie universities that have a lot of very deep connections with the oil industry and very wealthy oil donors that are private donors, which, of course, makes these universities, it gets them... through the days, it gets very nice facilities built for them, and UVic
and
does
lots of great education comes from those.
Yeah, and lots of really good professors get employed by that. But UVic doesn't have that luxury of having those sort of really wealthy oil people to help them out as much. But I mean, divestment's funny because I wonder what power. And we were discussing this before we record. I wonder what power the divestment issue. What ability does the divestment issue
have? It succeed?
I'm trying so hard here.
You mean the referendum?
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out with this election whether or not these candidates have the power to influence that issue. What do you guys think?
I don't see how you can just say, okay, well, we all voted, so you guys have to divest now. And the people who are in charge of that are going to go, yeah, great, what do you want me to do about it? Like, you can't just drop everything and... just go start investing in other things. Suddenly, that's not how.
And you wouldn't want that. Even if I agreed with it, I wouldn't want that, right?
Yeah. So, I don't really know. I feel like the people who are in charge are looking at divestment. They obviously have heard about it, and they're going, "Yeah, it's a great idea. We'll try." So, does a referendum then mean we're supporting the university to then maybe hire extra people to who their job is just to look at divesting the profits?
Well, I think, like, I don't know, it's tough, but I think largely the university is driven by the politics that run it, right? And it's like they're obviously an institution that needs, like, that needs to promote a certain public opinion. So, like, if the entire student body comes out in a referendum saying we are all against this, like, hugely profitable thing you're doing, it looks incredibly bad for them to keep doing it. When they're so involved in their public opinion, like, not to say they will immediately, but just for an institution that is so involved in the public opinion, it would be, like, unbeneficial for them to keep doing that.
Oh, right? Absolutely, yeah. I agree. That's totally true. I think that's all. And ultimately, we know what won't work, and that's doing nothing. We know that.
Right?
That's what we said before. The alternative is, of course, you know, not discussing these issues and you know, not meeting quorum, essentially, when it comes to any of these issues, if you figuratively or metaphorically or whatever, we're actually physically showing up. If you can't get enough people to care about these issues, then it doesn't matter. I think we all agree that that UVic is sort of has their hearts in the right place, maybe, or at least would like to put their heart in the right place if it made any sense for them. You know, and we're not here to cheer on UVic for everything we do. We definitely take enough delight in pointing out what they do wrong. I just feel like if they had an option that was both economically viable and environmentally friendly, they would choose it right now. And I feel like they're moving towards that hell or high water anyway. So.
Yeah, how much power can this referendum hold, I guess, is what we're going to
We'll find out, I guess, in the coming... So, I guess, in closing, what was your favorite movie this year? The most important issue.
It can't be
Birdman, sorry. It can't even be Oscar nominated. Your favorite movie that wasn't...
Can't be Oscar nominated?
It wasn't in the Oscars. The list, eh?
Let's give it some thought.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
So many films.
Yeah.
So many films.
Favorite movie that had nothing to do with the Oscars. Because I mean, I liked Nightcrawler.
I really liked Nightcrawler too. It didn't get a nomination though.
Oh, I guess so, but it wasn't really in that.
It didn't get the, you know.
It didn't really qualify for the.
Still haven't seen Nightcrawler.
It's good.
It's creepy.
Jake Gyllenhaal is super creepy.
So what would be your favorite? What was your favorite animated film then this year? I don't even care if it was nominated for an Oscar. You tell me. Lego Movie, I guess is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, probably.
What's one that we didn't see? Tell us.
Box Trolls.
Box Trolls.
Did you watch Box Trolls?
No, we played at CineCenter.
It was so good.
Box Trolls.
I thought it was amazing. Okay. I also love stop motion, so there's probably a huge bias there, but I thought it was fantastic. And like Simon Pegg and all kinds of cool people are in it. Jake Frost, is that his name? The other guy who's always with Simon Pegg.
Oh,
Nick Frost.
Okay. Yeah. That was, off the top of my head, that was probably the best animated film you didn't see.
Oof, yeah, I mean, I want to say Nightcrawler too. I'm trying to just reel the tapes back and see what else I saw this year. I see so many movies.
It was The Room. It was The Room at CineCentre.
I did watch The Room this year.
I did too, for the first time.
And I did the drinking game to it. It's not healthy. It's very dangerous.
Oh, but it's so much fun.
The Room, if you didn't get to see The Room, it's the best film ever made, and it shows at CineCentre at least once a year.
Yeah.
That's where we're going to leave it. Thank you guys so much for listening. This has been the fourth edition of the Martlet Roundtable. I'm Taylor McKee, the humor, sports, and lifestyle editor. This is Adrian Paradis,
the staff writer for the Martlet.
Adam Heyman,
the opinions and feature editor.
Thanks for listening. Check back next week.